The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it. Believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to a very special Christmas episode of Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of the little dumber boy to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this Christmas week is the argument from silence, also known as argumentum ex silentio.
Yeah, so the argument from silence is where people assume that a lack of an answer or a lack of information proves their point in some way.
Yeah,
so they kind of read into the silence in a way that isn't really justified by the silence. Because you can't necessarily know what silence means in every context. Yeah. But handily, it always means what the arguer wants it to mean.
Yes. And in a country that is enshrined in the Constitution, that's quite interesting, isn't it? Because one would think that it's only got one interpretation.
Yeah. So our first example from Trump this week comes actually from one of his books, How to Get Rich, which obviously he probably didn't write himself. But
and nor has he got rich. Has he got rich?
No. And in the book he says, all of the women on The Apprentice flirted with me, consciously or unconsciously. That's to be expected.
How do you unconsciously flirt with somebody? That's handy, isn't it? That all of them, they all did it, whether they know it or not.
Yeah,
that's what they did.
So that brilliantly gets past the idea that people could say, I didn't. Of course I didn't. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Because you say,
people who actively didn't flirt. Yeah.
You not only didn't say you were flirting, you didn't even know you were doing it. But of course, because I'm me, that's
to be expected. It compounds it. It kind of adds literally insult to injury by saying that's to be expected. It's only to be expected given the fine figure of a man that I am, fine figure of two or three men that he is.
So he's very much, I think, reading into their stuff that wasn't said and probably didn't happen.
Which
benefits him in that way.
Yeah.
At least it benefits his ego, at least. So.
Yeah.
The second, Mark, you've already alluded to in terms of the Constitution, it's the Fifth Amendment.
Her staffers taking the Fifth Amendment. How about that? And her ringleaders getting immunity. Now, she has people taking the Fifth Amendment. Four people plus the guy who illegally did the server. He put in the illegal server. So there are five people taking the Fifth Amendment, like you see on the mob, right? You see, the mob takes the Fifth. If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment?
Like on the mob.
You see on the mob.
Yeah.
That show, the mob.
He's talking about
Hillary's kind of Benghazi investigation. I think this was probably the seventh investigation they did into Benghazi. But it brought up the whole kind of email server thing. And he's talking about five people who took the Fifth Amendment. I couldn't find five. Right. I could find only two of people who actually worked for her who had, including the guy who set up her server. Two people also who worked for the company that kind of ran the server, who didn't work for Hillary. That's the extent of the people I could find. And it was explained at the time that the reason that, in particular, the guy who set up the server didn't want to answer questions was because, Trump yelled about witch hunts for so long. This had been ongoing for several years, the Benghazi investigation, and they had found absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And so every time they got someone to actually answer questions in front of the committee, there were kind of accusations made about things that they'd done wrong that could be further investigated and things like that.
Right.
So they were saying, look, I'm just not going to come and answer questions.
Yeah.
Because I haven't done anything, and you'll just accuse me of stuff you can't prove.
Yeah.
Because that's what you've been doing all this time. So that was the argument, at least at the time. Trump's assumption is that if you take the Fifth, then it's because you've done something wrong.
But in the Mueller investigation, that's exactly what they told him to do, isn't it? To not
answer
questions. Yeah.
He's done it multiple times in the past. He did one investigation lawsuit that he sat for. He invoked the Fifth Amendment 97 times.
Whoa.
To avoid answering any questions. And the thing is, as with our system in the UK, where you have the right to remain silent, and that cannot be then used to incriminate you in the sense that the fact that you have chosen to remain silent can't be taken to imply guilt.
Yeah.
That's the same with the Fifth Amendment. There may be other reasons why you have chosen not to answer the questions. It may be that it would implicate you in something else that you think you might have done wrong or something like that. Or either way, the fact is you're being tried or you're being questioned about a particular crime. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean that you're guilty of that crime when you say, I don't want to answer this question. I have the right not to answer this question, and I'm invoking that right.
Yeah. So, because otherwise, why would it be enshrined in the Constitution? Yeah, I mean, it's got to protect everybody, not just the people you decide it doesn't.
Yeah.
So it's not just for presidents, it's for everybody. Whether presidents and ex-presidents don't like you using it, it's there for everybody.
Yeah. And so our final example in this section is Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yay.
This was actually before she was a member of Congress.
Oh, okay.
She was basically in the street in Washington harassing David Hogg, who was one of the teenagers at the Parkland school shooting and who has since been one of the most outspoken kind of campaigners against unfettered gun rights and in favour of gun control, which is kind of understandable when your school has been attacked and friends of yours have been killed. But Marjorie Taylor Greene decided that she was going to harass David Hogg out on the street of Washington.
David, why are you supporting the red flag laws? If Scott Peterson, the resource officer at Parkland, had done his job, then Nicholas Cruz wouldn't have killed anybody in your high school, or at least protected them. Why are you supporting red flag gun laws that attack our Second Amendment rights? And why are you using kids to get to, as a barrier? Do you not know how to defend your stance? Look, I'm an American citizen. I'm a gun owner. I have a concealed carry permit. I carry a gun for protection for myself. And you are using your lobby and the money behind it and the kids to try to take away my Second Amendment rights. You don't have anything to say for yourself? You can't defend your stance? How did you get over 30 appointments with senators? How'd you do that? How did you get major press coverage on this issue? And how did you get kids? Why do you use kids? Why kids? You know, if school zones were protected with security guards with guns, there would be no mass shootings at schools. Do you know that? The best way to stop a bad guy with a gun is with a good guy with a gun. But yet you're attacking our Second Amendment. And you have nothing to say. No words. So I'm walking. He's got nothing to say. Sad. He has nothing to say because there really isn't anything to say, you guys. He has nothing to say because he's paid to do this.
Well, why are you using kids?
Why are you using kids to talk about school shootings?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can think of a few reasons not to want to talk to Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah. Yeah. Three, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Uh-huh. There's three right there.
But she assumes, the reason she states that she assumes that he won't answer her basically is because he can't defend his stance and because he's being paid to hold the position that he holds as a as a child involved in a school shooting. He is being paid to ask adults to have more gun control.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was that, there was that the shooting where Trump said, next time I'll jump in front of the
I think it was that one.
The way to fix good guys with bad guys with guns is to give guns to good guys.
Yes.
Yeah, how's that working out for you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, regardless of the errors in what she was actually saying
yeah.
about school shootings, he isn't required to debate her.
And the fact that he isn't is that no conclusions can be drawn from that.
No. No, it doesn't mean he didn't have an answer. It doesn't mean he can't defend his stance. It doesn't mean he's being paid by George Soros to to take your guns away.
Yeah.
It just means that he, in that moment, didn't want to respond to her. Felt that it was better to just keep walking away from the crazy lady.
Yeah, who is self-confessed carrying a gun.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Chasing teenagers down the street.
Down the street. And with a gun in a purse. Yeah. Yeah. And then wondering why he's not answering. Okay. Yeah. Self-awareness. Also a thing the right doesn't have. Humour, self-awareness. Yeah.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Well, it's been quite interesting looking at this. And I could stand accused of shoehorning in current events into this, despite the subject I'm going to get them in. But it kind of comes from, in the UK, we don't have a Fifth Amendment written into the Constitution. Well, we don't have a written Constitution, unless you count the Magna Carta. So we don't have a Fifth that can be appealed to. There's no kind of official silent position that you can take as a legitimate response, apart from, as Jim alluded to, the right to remain silent when you're being arrested, which, come to think of it, actually may lead to phalanxes of mute government ministers at some idyllic point in the future, perhaps. But anyway, in April this year, Cabinet Secretary and head of the Civil Service, Simon Case, went before the Public Administration Constitutional Affairs Committee, where he was asked about the row over who paid for the refurbishment of Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Downing Street flat, and more specifically, who leaked the story. And notwithstanding that this has been under investigation for 5 months at this point, he simply can't answer anything for the following reasons.
Just because something isn't a criminal offence doesn't mean there aren't national security issues involved in the or classified matters, rather, I should say, very specifically, in relation to how that investigation is conducted, and that's why I'm unable to comment. I'm genuinely not trying to frustrate the committee, but I am constrained in what I can say. My answer is the same as before. I can't go into these sorts of details relating to an ongoing inquiry. But again, you're inviting me to comment on the detail of an ongoing investigation, which, as I've said, I'm under constraints relating to classification, etc. And so I'm afraid I can't go into these sorts of details. It is not out of rudeness or disrespect to the committee, but there are constraints on what I can say in this forum. I can only apologise to the committee again for these constraints I'm operating in, and which is why we have, which is why, with the Prime Minister's permission, we've been updating the Speaker on Privy Council terms.
The Speaker is not in charge of scrutiny of the functioning of the civil service. This committee is, and our chairman is.
Look, I mean, I'm very happy to pick that up with the chairman and the relevant authorities. It sounds like a potential way through. And again, I really understand, apologise for having to frustrate what are legitimate lines of inquiry.
So he's at great pains actually to say nothing, but also at great pains to cover himself by saying there's nothing to be implied from the fact that I can't say anything other than the fact that I'm under constraints not to say anything. So he keeps saying it's not out of disrespect for the the committee, nor is it because he's trying to frustrate their inquiries. I mean, the net result is he's doing exactly that, but they're not to imply that from his silence.
They're not to infer it.
Yes, exactly. And also note that I guess the equivalent of the taking the Fifth Amendment, or you know, the argument from silence, or the kind of appeal to I need to be not answering this question, is when people like him in government or in politics invoke national security, or like he says, classification, etc. And you think, oh, well, that's all right then. You know, I can't tell you this because of classification, etc. Rather than, you know, I've got nothing to say on the matter. But he clearly has got loads to say. Also note that he needs to ask permission of the Prime Minister to begin any investigation. So, and from a Prime Minister who, you know, he had to get permission to go and report to someone that is clearly not in charge of his department. And this committee is, in order to skirt round any kind of scrutiny of the things. So all of the things that he's begging them not to infer can only be inferred by the fact that he's doing this.
I haven't listened to your other clips yet, but he's no one at this point is committing the fallacy in that they aren't inferring stuff that can't be inferred from the silence.
Yep.
But he is, I see where it is, because he is kind of heading it off before anyone before anyone gets the opportunity to do that. He's seeing
that's
that
right, and actually in the entirety of, he's there for like 40 minutes, doesn't answer a bloody thing. And they don't actually infer, they just continue to ask questions of him. So in a way, he kind of tripping over his own silence, I think, or lack of silence. If you can be silent by filling the space with words,
Boris
apologizing
all
not
the
speaking.
Time.
Yeah.
And Trump.
Exactly. Yeah,
we'll, great
we'll
it.
Come in shortly too. Yeah, but what's interesting about it is that this committee is the one in charge of scrutinising civil service, and on the committee is Labour MP Karen Smith, who says, why did you come here if you knew you wouldn't be able to talk about this stuff?
Mr Case, you're the guardian of the propriety and ethics and civil service conduct in your role. Do you think it's acceptable that you come before this committee to discuss these matters, having been told that you can't discuss them? You're essentially pleading the Fifth. Is that acceptable?
You know, as I said, I can only apologise to...
No, that's okay. Thanks for your apology. But is it acceptable?
Well, yeah, I'm afraid it's necessary to protect the integrity of an ongoing investigation and the techniques involved.
So I think she nearly commits it by saying that what you're doing must be unacceptable because you're not telling us anything. So therefore, what you've got to say is not good thing. It's not a good thing. I mean, it's almost there. She almost teeters on.
Yeah, it's kind of. Well, it's more just like, why are you here?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they are extraordinarily polite throughout the entire thing. I mean, and she's quite right. He's been there for 40 minutes, and they've done all they can to try and, they, you know, he says, well, I can't talk about this. I said, okay, so given the fact that it's not a criminal investigation, in your investigation, you haven't found any criminal happenings, surely you could tell us that. Well, no, I can't even tell you that. And so they kind of, yeah, I mean, there is lots of inference to be had. And I'm not sure that, well, given what we now know, I'm not sure that we would be committing the fallacy. Well, we would, but by saying, well, actually, the fact that you're hiding all of this stuff and the fact that you're skirting around the very committee that's supposed to scrutinise this stuff, and you are supposed to be investigating things to uphold the morals of and the operating standards of the government and you aren't, the fact that you're going around this in such a opaque and oblique way infers that you've got something to hide.
Implies that you've got something to hide.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can commit this fallacy, of course, by inferring something that you don't have all the information to infer, and still be right. You've still done something illogical or committed a fallacy, even if you turn out to be right about it, because it didn't logically follow from the information you had. And of course, it isn't necessarily fallacious if the reason that you infer a particular thing from silence is because you have other evidence to assume that thing.
Yeah.
If you're only basing it on the silence, on the lack of an answer, that's where it's a problem, and there's no logical basis for you to make to go one way or the other. It doesn't mean you can't ever make any inferences, and it depends what those inferences are based on, as well as the lack of a forthcoming answer.
And actually, in a way, another member of the committee, Tory MP Jackie Doyle Price, I think goes a bit far with the and commits the fallacy when she's talking about the leaked phone messages in this brief clip.
Because, of course, the fact it's not on their phones doesn't mean they're not guilty of the leak.
And you kind of go, okay, yeah.
I'm going to continue to push back. I don't think that's the fallacy, but also I don't think she's wrong. She's not saying, if she was saying that the fact that it's not on their phones means we can assume that they've deleted it from their phones, for example.
Yeah.
That would be fallacious. All she's pointing out is that absence of evidence isn't evidence of absence, which is fair. The fact that they haven't presented us with the evidence that this thing happened doesn't mean it didn't happen. It just means we can't prove it using this method, which is valid.
And I guess an invalid response to that would be, well, no news is good news. We haven't found anything, so that must be fine then.
Well, we'll come back to no news is good news.
Oh, right, okay, that's the classic inference, isn't it? Yeah. So, I mean, the thing that one would be right in all this kind of implied inferences or inferred implications. This week he actually did resign, having been asked to also investigate the legality of parties being held at number one during lockdown, after he categorically stated he knew nothing of such gatherings happening. And the reason he resigned is because details emerged of a party that he himself hosted in room 103 of the Cabinet Office, which began at 5:30 and was listed in a digital calendar invitation to a Christmas party. And at that time, on December 17th, 2020, household mixing was banned in London. He has remained silent on the matter.
It really feels like, if you are that person, if you hosted a party last year and they said, okay, we want you to investigate whether any parties were hosted last year, you might say, you know, I don't think I'm the best person for this job.
I think I'm the right one to do that. Yeah, you'd kind of, but then...
You'd have to be really confident it wasn't going to come out.
Yeah. But again, that's a sort of similar thing, because it's a bit like the when Trump grumbled that... Who was it who recused himself from...
Was it Jeff Sessions? Do you mean Jeff Sessions?
Oh, yeah, there you go, Jeff Sessions.
Attorney General, so, yeah.
Yeah, when he recused himself and he said, no, I can't do that. And he gets all over that. And he kind of like, if he had recused himself, or done the equivalent English version of that, if, you know, Simon case, people would have just gone, ah.
Yeah, but it didn't need to be publicly, did it? I mean, presumably someone sidled up to him in Whitehall and said, we'd like you to run this investigation. Rather, they didn't put it in the paper.
No,
we're thinking of asking Simon.
But I think that's kind of his job as cabinet secretary, is to look after the morals and the smooth running of the government procedures. And when you're part of the problem, So I think he did the usual thing and said, "I've become the story," rather than "I'm guilty as charged." So whilst he's remained silent on the matter, when asked about this kind of desperately incriminating rule-breaking party stuff and the real-world impact on the Cabinet Office, the unprecedented defeat in the Shropshire by-election and the rebellion by his party on the restrictions vote, Boris can't be silent. He doesn't... Yeah, like we were saying earlier, he says nothing but fills the space. Instead, what he does is appeal to journalists to be silent about it. So I'm just going to shoehorn this stuff in because it's funny. So here he is on the actual anniversary of Simon Case's Christmas party, answering Sky News' Sam Coates' question.
Do you think the absolutely cavalier approach to lockdown rules by you and your staff in Downing Street played a part in last night's defeat?
Basically, what's been going wrong, Sam, is that in the last few weeks, some things have been going very well, but what people have been hearing is just a constant litany of stuff about politics and politicians and stuff that isn't about them.
Prime Minister, it sounds to me like you're quite clearly blaming the public for being focused on the wrong thing and the media for reporting the wrong thing. So you trying to change the sleaze rules in favour of you and your colleagues, which triggered the by-election, which caused this defeat.
Yes.
Do you accept hands up responsibility for that?
Yeah, I do, because I think it goes back to exactly what I was just saying, Sam, which I think it comes into the overall category of politicians talking about ourselves and those issues and seeming to be focused on those issues at the expense of the things that really matter to people.
Final question. Tory MPs are saying publicly that conversations have begun about your future. If it was in the interest of the Conservative Party, would you resign?
Sam, that is exactly the kind of question that qualifies, that breaks the golden rule. What we're focusing on is getting the job done. What we're focusing on is trying to make sure that we not only have
a... That's absolutely brilliant. It's like,
brilliant.
Mr. Prime Minister, are you a massive hypocrite? Enough about me. Let's talk about you.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the whole thing, he kind of says he's blaming the entirety of the media. Well, not the entirety of the media. The Sun dutifully pushed this story to the sixth page. He's blaming them for being silent on the good things that they're talking about. So he's saying, you know, the reason you're doing this is because you, like us, are focused on politics and politicians. And nobody's interested in that. They're all interested in the good things we're doing. Why are you not telling them about that? And he's going, well, hang on a minute. The reason, you know, it does affect real people because, you know, real people didn't vote your candidate in the constituency where you and your real actions caused him to have to resign.
And nobody's interested in hearing
about
laws we may have broken.
Exactly. And then he denies that he's doing that, and then he gets really angry and about that. Oh, it's just brilliant. These are the questions you can't ask, and you need to concentrate on the things that you've been silent about up until now. You know, why haven't you done that? And that's a bad thing, and I'm doing good stuff and you're doing a bad thing by not reporting on this stuff. And he gets really angry about it, and it's worth just playing that angry bit again.
That is exactly the kind of question that qualifies, that breaks the golden rule. Qualifies, that breaks the golden rule.
What the golden rule is, actually, Sam Coates tweeted answers on a postcard, but he just got really angry about that. And, you know, to be fair, I guess Boris was visibly trying to make it up to us rather than just making things up, because he conducted the interview whilst wearing a mask, giving the lie to the adage that you can tell when Boris is lying because you can see his lips move. No lips, no lies, and don't the rules. So I know it's kind of stretching the point, but it is well worth having a listen to.
Silence them, the whole of them. I'm not coming. wholly reliant on fallacies in the wild. Look for wild fallacies.
There we are, Nat King Cole with Boris's lament about silencing the media.
See, I usually can't predict what song we're going to have for the House in the Wild, but doing a Christmas episode of Argument from Silence, I was
got
like,
to be that.
It was 80% sure it was going to be that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So in the Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective, and this week our first example comes from The Office.
Did somebody here leave a map in the printer to Youngstown, Ohio?
Attention, office. Who here is planning a trip to Youngstown, Ohio? I will take your silence to mean that you're all hiding something.
Yeah. There you go. Yes.
Yeah. So because exactly no one instantly owns up to who is going to Youngstown, Ohio, they're all hiding something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll take your silence as they're all hiding something. Yeah. I mean, that's that. I think that through the entirety of that, the kind of standards committee thing, that's the implication, is the reason you're going to extraordinary lengths where he's making all sorts of noises that aren't actually words. It's, you know, one of them should have just said, and I couldn't find any of them having said it, and I think they're all a bit too adult to do that, that they should have just said to him, well, we'll take your evasion as an admission of guilt then. You know, they should have just done that. And he would have fallen apart. He would have got really angry, like Boris did. You know? Yeah. It's exactly the kind of thing. Yeah.
So our second example comes from Catch 22. We've featured Catch 22 in this section before. But this is another section in which they are being given a briefing on an upcoming bombing raid.
Intelligence reports indicate that you shouldn't have to worry about flak and that kind of stuff. We were hoping for some new recon photos on enemy strength in that area. Unfortunately, they haven't arrived, but as I always say, no news is good news.
There you go. Yes, there it is.
So, yeah,
that's,
no news
that's
is good
it,
news.
Isn't it? No news is good news.
Is absolutely an example from an argument from silence, because you are inferring that the silence, the lack of news,
can only mean
decided in one direction or the other. Yeah, it's good. And obviously, a lack of recon photos of the area you're about to go and attack.
Yeah.
Probably not good news.
Probably not good news.
Yeah. There's no reason to assume that means that there's not something bad there that is going to shoot you. So,
not least the fact that they weren't able to get any recon photos.
Yeah, there's
or
that.
They did and couldn't get back. Yeah. It is that kind of stuff. It's a bit like, they've obviously not been shielded, not had extra armor fitted in the right places on them. On the planes.
Yeah, our final example in this section is actually a book called Did Marco Polo Go to China? By a historian called Frances Wood. And this is a book from 1995. And she...
I know, I was thinking it was like 1850.
Yeah, no, this is like quite reasonably recent.
Yeah.
Where she basically questioned the kind of established wisdom that Marco Polo not only went to China, but spent like 15 years in the court of Kublai Khan. And the reason that she questioned it is because in Marco Polo's writing, there's things about China he doesn't mention.
Right.
Such as things like the Great Wall of China, which is pretty big. And you would think he would mention it, but it's not, it's not in there. He doesn't mention chopsticks or tea or foot binding, or various other things that she thinks, if he really spent that much time in China and was trying to write stuff about what China was like, he would have written those things in. Now, that's not an immediately fallacious argument. There is kind of some reasoning behind it, that it's not just that he didn't mention these things, but that he was there for a long time. He was writing about how China was different to the, Italy and other places. And these are things of great significance.
The big differences,
It doesn't take into account the many things he did write about that hadn't previously been written about by Westerners, that he couldn't have really known without having gone to China and spent time there. It doesn't take into account that he brought back paper money or various other things that he is credited with introducing to the West from his time in China. And basically, the majority of serious historians who have looked at her claims and who have looked at the other available evidence don't agree with her. It doesn't rule it out, but it's one of those things with fallacies where sometimes it's just about probability, and it kind of adds evidence in one direction. But one thing, for example, is that the argument from silence is not featured in Aristotle's book on sophistical refutations, where he started listing logical fallacies. That doesn't mean it isn't a logical fallacy.
Yeah. yeah.
But Aristotle didn't write about it, so...
Yep. Nor did he write about the Gish Gallop.
No.
So, you know, that obviously isn't one either. Mm.
So we're gonna play...
Fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody. As well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
Well, I think that says it all.
So, normally I read out three Trump quotes, but it's Christmas.
Yeah.
And we do things a little bit different in Fake News at Christmas. And this year, I've actually got two games for you to choose between.
Oh, okay.
So you can either play a game where you have to pick the music artists that have threatened legal action to get Trump to stop using their music.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Or...
have we got time for all of them?
Well, I've picked some. Or you can choose things which Trump has said are beautiful.
Oh, I think the musical artist has got... it feels a bit more Christmas somehow. All the artists that have not gifted their music to Trump. Right, far from it. Quite the opposite. Okay.
So I have a list of 10 music artists who, five of whom, have threatened legal action at least. Some have actually tried to take him to court or at least issued cease and desist orders. Well, but five of them have threatened legal action. And
some of
five,
them are dead.
in some cases it may be their estates. But and five have not. So what you have to do is pick the five you think have threatened legal action. And if you get three or more of them right, you get a point.
Yeah. Ooh. Okay.
So there you go. So the artists are Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Yeah.
The Backstreet Boys. Celine Dion.
Right.
Creedence Clearwater Revival. Frank Sinatra. Neil Young. R.E.M., Tom Petty, The Village People, and The Who.
Wow. I want to know what the songs are. Yeah. Okay, I think that The Who would have had something to say about that. And I wonder what the song was. Was it? Won't Get Forward Again. Okay. Right, yeah, okay, so I'm going to plump for The Who. So, yeah. And REM are the kind of, those kind of guys, they would have something to say about that. I would really like the Frank Sinatra estate to, what was it, My Way? Definitely, he's got to have at some point played My Way as he slid down a slope. So I'm going to have that one as well.
I will tell you, these are all artists he has played regularly at his rallies. So it's they're all examples.
Whether they've sued him to stop. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and he did do The Village People, didn't he? But would they be that concerned to actually stop him? Okay. The Backstreet Boys, I don't know. You see, and the fact that they haven't, there's nothing to be inferred from their silence. Yeah.
Absolutely, I completely agree. You can't assume that these people who haven't tried to sue Trump actually support him.
Yes. So I'm doing the opposite, which is the fact that they have said something about it. It means they're the kind of artist I would quite like. Okay, so Batman Turner Overdrive, that's You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet, I suspect.
With the baby.
Yeah. And as I'm doing it the right, are they the kind of band that would object to that? Don't know, you know, because they're quite, they've got 19 years, and as we all know, everyone moves slowly to the right as you're getting older. Neil Young? Yeah, because Tom Petty's dead as well. I'm going to plump for Batman Turner Overdrive, and oddly, The Village People, because basically he's not a blue-collar worker and neither are they, but they represent blue-collar workers. And yeah, so that's my five. Batman Turner Overdrive, Frank Sinatra, REM, The Village People and The Who have all sued Trump to get him to stop playing their music at his gigs.
So we'll go through them in order.
Yeah, and I'll be really surprised if they're not. Yeah, yeah.
Batman Turner Overdrive.
Yeah.
He did play You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet repeatedly. Yeah. They have not...
Really? Well,
even complained, as far as I can tell.
I'm appalled by that. I'm going to tear up all the albums.
The other thing I would say is that the people who are in the list who have not tried to sue him also have not publicly objected. There's a whole other list of people who've publicly said stop it, but not actually tried to take
legal action. Not done anything about it.
But the five who have not taken action in this list have remained silent.
See, I'm being led by the fact that I quite like that song, and ergo, if I like them, then they must be the kind of people that I like. Yeah, which is a circular argument, I admit. And yeah, well, I'm appalled by this. And we're committing the fallacy by saying not only have they not said,
they haven't even said anything about it.
They've not said anything. So that, you know, you draw your own conclusions, but I think these questions should be asked.
So you also think Frank Sinatra, or the estate of Frank Sinatra, they have not tried to sue.
Really?
That he used.
Yeah.
The extent to which that became an issue was that Mia Farrow tweeted, Frank Sinatra, I think Frank Sinatra would have loathed Donald Trump. And Nancy Sinatra responded to say he did.
Excellent.
Questioned about his use of My Way, Nancy pointed out that the first line of the song is "The end is near."
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, true enough. But also Frank Sinatra, you know, possible mob connections.
Yeah.
You know, not particularly known for his socialist views. But yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no!
So that's two wrong. REM. Also think would have responded with legal action, and they did.
Please don't let me down, boys. Thank God for that.
So it started off in 2015 at a DC rally with Ted Cruz. Trump used "It's the End of the World as We Know It," and Michael Stipe tweeted, "Go fuck yourselves, the lot of you, you sad attention grabbing, power hungry little men. Do not use our music or my voice for your moronic charade of a campaign."
Nice. That's properly. And then went on to sue them.
Well, he continued using the music. So 2020, eventually, REM's Mike Mills tweeted, "We are aware that the president continues to use our music at his rallies. We're exploring all legal avenues to prevent this. If that's not possible, please know that we do not condone the use of our music by this fraud and con man." So
that's saying in the strongest possible terms, isn't it? No, and that's kind of, again, no self-awareness, you know, and now the end is near and it's the end of the world as we know it.
Yeah, he doesn't always pick the best things to represent.
No. Okay, Village People.
Moving on to the Village People. Yeah.
Because didn't he do YMCA?
He's done YMCA something? And Macho Man yeah. repeatedly.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And initially, the Village People were fine with it. They just basically didn't want to get involved. They didn't necessarily agree with him, but they were like, okay, whatever.
And they've got their pensions to consider, so, you know, you kind of think they're getting royalties.
Following the protests after the death of George Floyd, when Trump tweeted, when the looting starts, the shooting starts, Victor Willis of the Village People said, if Trump orders the U.S. military to fire on his own citizens on U.S. soil, Americans will rise up in such numbers outside of the White House, he might be forced out of office prior to the election. Don't do it, Mr. President, and I ask that you no longer use any of my music at your rallies, especially YMCA and Macho Man. Sorry, but I can no longer look the other way. And they issued a cease and desist letter at that point.
Yeah.
So.
But has it worked? I mean, you know, given the fact that Trump sues people left, right and centre.
Yeah.
And people kind of ignore it. Does he?
He's largely ignored most of the people who've tried to stop him. Depends. Depends whether he has any kind of respect for them at all. Dee Snider of Twisted Sister asked him to stop and he stopped. There are others. So,
well, they look frighteningly, you know, like they could do you some damage. You know,
Well, Dee Snider was on Celebrity Apprentice, so I think maybe he kind of got to know Trump a little bit. I don't know.
Right.
Anyway.
Or at least where he lives.
Yeah. So you've got two right and two wrong so far. Yeah. And it all hinges.
All hangs on the who.
On the who.
Come on, Pete, don't let me down. Yeah.
And the who.
Yeah.
Have not said anything about Trump using their music.
What the fuck? Pete Townsend, you media whore. Jesus.
Or someone who doesn't want to get involved in politics.
Yeah. No, his silence clearly means he's worried about his pension fund. What the hell? No!
Yeah.
You would think that you would... Oh, what? So what did he use? What does he play? Don't Get Fooled Again.
He's played a few Who songs, actually. Pinball Wizard was one of them.
Right.
Don't know why. There's a few, but they haven't come out publicly either way on that. So we can't infer their views.
Because there was a similar thing with David Cameron and The Jam, I think. You know, the British post-mod punk group. And I think Paul Weller had lots to say about it. And The Clash as well, you know, all of whom are dead. And just like everybody in the kind of punk rock community just went, they didn't say, please don't do this, but they just kind of went, you're lying. you're not the kind of guy, you've never heard of The Clash. You know, you don't, what?
Yeah.
You went to Eton. Give over. You're a Frank Sinatra man, straight up and down. No, well, I'm appalled.
The ones you missed.
Yeah, who did? I bet Celine Dion did.
Celine Dion didn't. No.
Oh, right.
No.
She's a Canadian.
Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Yeah.
Trump used the song Fortunate Son multiple times, which is very ironic. And John Fogerty said, I wrote this song because as a veteran I was disgusted that some people were allowed to be excluded from serving our country because they had access to political and financial privilege. I also wrote about wealthy people not paying their fair share of taxes. Mr. Trump is a prime example of both of these issues. Mr. Trump also fans the flames of hatred, racism and fear while rewriting recent history is even more reason to be troubled by this use of my song. And sent a cease and desist order to him.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a song about privilege and people getting stuff they haven't done any work for. It's so weird.
But not in a pleasing way.
No.
Not in a kind of, this is all right, this is what should everybody should do.
This is an unacceptable system.
Shut up about it.
It should be ended.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. And Trump, again, with no self-awareness and no sense of irony, just kind of go, oh, yeah, there you go, we'll play that then.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what I am.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the process, thumbing his nose at the fans of Creedence Clearwater, you know, vets and blue-collar workers who all vote for him.
No. I mean, in the same way as he unironically dances to Macho Man, which is not what he thinks it's about.
No.
I mean, they also frequently have played Born in the USA, which is a song not about how great it is to have been born in the USA, but the fact that a veteran returning from war, despite having been born in the USA, cannot catch a fucking break. Yeah. Springsteen did not take legal action against that, but did enthusiastically endorse Hillary Clinton. And then several times when Born in the USA started to be played at Trump rallies, people started booing after that. So, yeah.
That was one way to go. That's the way to do it. Yeah. Well, he's just done a thing with Obama. They've put a kind of musical extravaganza together.
Yeah.
Yeah, which would be quite interesting to. And I saw an interview with them both, and Springsteen looks, I think they're contemporary in age-ish. Springsteen looks like Obama's grandfather.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's granddad. God damn it.
So, Neil Young was one of the others. He
really? Yes. Yeah, I thought that Neil Young would have been, you know, he's kind of a closet rocker.
No. He's a hippie. Mm. His somewhat ironic Rocking in the Free World was one that Trump picked. And he has kind of vacillated on whether to actually take legal action or not. But basically he said in kind of the, I think 2020, I'm changing my mind about suing President Trump, he wrote after having decided not to. Reconsidering, right. I'm looking at it again. There's a long history to consider, and I originally considered it, decided not to pursue, but then President Trump ordered thugs in uniform onto our streets. His idea, he ordered it himself. Imagine what it feels like to hear Rockin' in the Free World after this president speaks like it's his theme song. I did not write it for that.
Yeah, they're all a bit... you kind of go, well, okay, yeah... which is why I wanted, you know, The Who to be like Clash.
Yeah.
Go, stop it. Oi, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, straight away. Please do not ever play our stuff again. But he's just going, well, you know, I thought about it. It's a long history. No, there isn't. It's only been there 4 years, you know. How long does it take you to make your mind up?
He originally decided to. And then he decided not to because of COVID, partly because he thought, you know, there's actually more important stuff. This isn't that big a deal.
True.
There's other stuff going on that people need to focus on.
Yeah.
But then riots in the streets.
Then riots. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it kind of is an important thing because it's the, you know, the intangible, visceral connection that you have with music is what Trump is tapping into. Mm-hmm. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's doing bread and circuses, so he will, you know, it's the triumphant trumpet blare before the gladiators come in and all that kind of stuff, and everybody goes, yeah, you're our favorite emperor. So if he's stealing your music in order to promote himself, well, he's not stealing it, he's using it. Presumably he's paying for it.
He takes advantage of the fact that many of the venues he does rallies at have blanket copyright clearance.
Right. Yeah.
So he doesn't tend to pay the artists.
I wonder if somebody at Mar-a-Lago is in charge of that. That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
So finally, the last one is Tom Petty, whose song I Won't Back Down was used at Trump rallies. Tom Petty's estate said Trump was in no way authorized to use this song to further a campaign that leaves too many Americans and common sense behind. Both the late Tom Petty and his family firmly stand against racism and discrimination of any kind. Tom Petty would never want a song of his used for a campaign of hate. And they further went on to say it was about underdogs and that's not what Trump is and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. So.
Nice. So it's, and it's all that stuff is properly, well, apart from Frank Sinatra maybe, it's properly blue collar worker stuff, isn't it? It's about struggling in the USA at the hands of an administration or successive administrations don't actually care about you. Will use exploit your labor and your loyalty and send you off to war and send you off to work, but won't support you when you come back. Or
yeah, a lot of it was kind of 60s and 70s protest music. So
yeah,
it's weird.
Yeah, all the stuff that Trump would have heard.
So, but I mean, there were many other examples that I could have picked. There was Linkin Park, Phil Collins, Rihanna, Pharrell Williams, the Rolling Stones, Andrew Lloyd Webber. Various others, also Eddie Grant, the reggae artist.
Wow.
Various others that objected but didn't take legal action, including Adele and Springsteen, as I mentioned, Guns N' Roses, Leonard Cohen, Pavarotti's estate.
Wow.
And also the Beatles, or at least the estate of George Harrison.
Wow.
Because Trump, or at least at the Republican National Convention, Trump's daughter, I think, came in. Yeah, Ivanka came in to Here Comes the Sun.
Right.
Which is weird. You would think Don Jr. would come into Here Comes the Sun. But,
well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or Trump would come into My Sweet Lord or something
but,
like that.
But the estate of George Harrison tweeted, the unauthorized use of Here Comes the Sun at the RNC is offensive and against the wishes of the George Harrison estate. If it had been Beware of Darkness, we may have approved it.
Or piggies. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
There you go.
Wow.
So, unfortunately, you only got two out of five. So you don't get a point for that one.
Damn. But it does. It is interesting how immediately I'm disappointed in the ones that didn't do anything. Because I'm inferring from their silence. Yeah. They're pro-Trump, consequently, as a result, you know, that then, or even the ones that didn't sue him, that just said something and then kept quiet. Oh, I don't know. Like Adele, I kind of almost heard myself.
Oh, she is another one who enthusiastically supported Hillary Clinton and said, "Don't vote for him," but didn't actually take legal action. So
that's probably the way to do it. That's a good move to actually. On Springsteen's part to just go, vote for Hillary, so that when he gets played, everybody boos. That's quite cool. Yeah.
So, unfortunately, that means you're still 41 out of 80 now. But it is Christmas, and it's time for playing games. So, for patrons, since I've already written it anyway, we're also going to do the beautiful game.
Righto. Yeah.
So if regular listeners, if you want to hear this, you'll have to become a patron, unfortunately. But for patrons, we will continue on and play the game of things that Trump has called beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes, it's time for the part of the show that this week, at least, is called The Grift That Keeps on Grifting is Not a Logical Fallacy, because Washington Post recently published a kind of bit of investigative journalism that they did, which they're reasonably good at, about all of the events that Trump has been hosting at Mar-a-Lago for Republican candidates. And as we know, Trump gave up his presidential salary for 4 years, and that meant that all the Republicans could say, look, he's not grifting, he's not just in it for the money, he's given up his, what is it, $400,000 a year salary or something like that that they get?
Right.
He made such a shitload more than that. Not only not getting rid of all his businesses while he was president,
whilst he was in office,
and taking as much as he can, but just continually taking as much as he can since.
Yeah. And also whilst he was in office, he would move loads of stuff there, host it all there.
And charge the Secret Service for staying there while he was there playing golf. And are just a ridiculous amount of money.
Well,
so what they've looked at is events that candidates who are raising money mostly raising money for their campaigns for Senate races or for governor's races. They're having their events at Mar-a-Lago. They're paying Trump a large amount of money. The amount of money may be different if it also includes a kind of personal appearance from Trump himself, and the kind of the candidate gets to stand with Trump and maybe he hosts the event. There's talk of the fact that, you know, attendees having pictures with Trump may end up also spending money on that. And sometimes it's kind of just dinners where people will pay to have dinner with Donald Trump, like among lots of other people. They describe one event where he was Trump dined at his private Florida club with about 20 couples, each of whom paid $250,000 to the Make America Great Again Super PAC. Which is a group run by close allies of the former president. And with super PACs, there's not much restriction on how much people can donate to it, and there's very little restriction on what the owners of the PAC can do with it.
And very little accountability.
So
That's $5 million. $5 million.
Yeah, for one dinner.
Wow. Jeepers, creepers, yeah.
And there's also possibly an expectation, possibly linked to the amount of money that people spend or you know what they do, that he will endorse them in their Senate race or their House race or their governorship race. And they found that of the 20 Republican candidates who held events at Trump properties in 2021, I think it was 12 or 13, were endorsed by Trump for that position. By the time their event came around, which is just it's just pay for play, isn't it? It's just
it feels not unlike cash for questions or cash for peerages in the UK, but it doesn't seem to carry the same level of corruption as that implies, because his entire kind of power in this is based on him saying, oh yeah, I endorse this candidate for this particular position, either on the Senate or as a governor or whatever, and that still carries some weight. That's what's kind of appalling about it, is that the Republican National Congress will stump up money or the GOP itself will think that this is worth investing this amount of money to get Trump's approval. So it just shows you how much power Trump still has over the Republican Party, and such a lack of imagination on the part of the Republican Party is that they can't see a way forward without Trump.
No, absolutely. So,
you know, he's raking it, which is just as well.
He is hand over fist. It's ridiculous.
He's kind of an after dinner speaker. You know, the kind of stuff that erudite previous presidents can go on a lecture circuit and stuff like that. Trump's not going to do that. He just goes and moans about stuff. It made me laugh out loud at one point. He said he's even got a picture book about his presidency. So there's Obama, who's written three volumes of memoir. He's on a lecture circuit. You know, he could write, but he speaks in poetry. Let's face it. You know, he works with Springsteen. Trump has got a picture book.
Yeah, but he wrote all the captions himself.
Some of them are even three spelled words long. Yes. Some of them are even polysyllabic. Yeah.
Some of them aren't just this is me with that guy.
Me with someone else. Me standing next to something. Me standing next to something.
Yeah,
else. I know. That's the kind of the scary bit, is that they're kind of they're not worried about throwing this amount of money, they're not... They're kind of doing it with their eyes shut, aren't they? They're just going, right, this will get us the endorsement we need. We'll just throw the money at him.
Yeah.
And he's... Yeah,
and the thing is...
He doesn't have to do anything.
Traditionally... And it obviously varies depending on kind of the scope of the event. But traditionally, a lot of fundraisers were held at the homes of wealthy donors. So, like, supporters of a candidate who have a huge mansion or, you know, a house in the Hamptons or whatever would have a fundraising event, and they would invite all of their wealthy friends along. But those people don't get paid for hosting the event. No. They are. That's part of their donation
that's
to
part
the candidate
of their donation.
That they either like or want some political power over once they get into office. For whatever reason they're doing it, they are giving this to the candidate. Trump is saying, yes, I support you. It will cost you £175,000 to have your event here.
Wow.
It's so bizarre. Yeah. Because the weirdos that support him are the Republican Party now. They're not the fringe. Yeah. They're not you know, the weirdos. They are the 200 plus Republicans who voted against Mark Meadows being held responsible for not talking to Congress.
I wonder if there's a If it's because there's no going back. I mean, how was the Republican Party when Bush was there? How was it before Trump? The whole thing's been turned on its head so much that they've got no idea how to go back.
Yeah. It is weird because there were a lot of surprising things about January 6th.
Mm.
For me, one of the most surprising things was that senior Republicans did not use that as an opportunity to say, that's it.
Enough's enough.
Yeah. That would have been an ideal time if any of them had any integrity at all left and any desire for their party not to continually move further and further to the crazy town. That would have been the time to say, you know, we've supported Trump. We've kind of given him our all. We've voted in things that he wanted us to do. You know, it's time to say he lost the election. We have to move forward. We have to work with the Democrats. We have to not do this to our country. What are you people doing? This is, you know, it's time to stop. That would
He's no longer in office. He's been voted out. All this is a... It's a rubber stamping exercise. It's just
would have lost some support for that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of Republicans who've walked away from the party because of Trump, who would have thought, okay, it's safe now to support Lindsey Graham or whoever again.
Yeah.
And that it would have been an ideal time to do that. But it was the watershed. It was like Sandy Hook for gun control. Once you can move past elementary school kids being slaughtered and say, now isn't the time to talk about gun control, you're never going to have that conversation. You're never going to do it.
Yeah. No.
And if you can get past January 6th and still say, we support Trump and his followers.
Yeah.
To
the extent we'll pay him, you know, £400,000 to host stuff with him.
What would have to happen?
And seek out his endorsement.
I think even if one of the legal cases against him goes how we would like it to go and he ends up in serious legal trouble, I don't know if that's even going to be enough for some people. Although Mitch McConnell has been making noises about the January 6th committee this week, that while he was very much against it and encouraging people not to join the select committee and things like that, he is now saying, since actually the Mark Meadows text messages and the emails and things came out, he's been saying, well, it's interesting to see who was involved and who was you know, in on the planning of things on January 6th, wow, and the public should hear about what the committee finds and things like that. He's been wow, he's been making quite kind of supportive noises about yeah, that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Christ knows if it means he would actually do anything if
yeah, yeah,
Republicans were sanctioned or they wanted to vote yeah, for sanctions.
Yeah, but, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's
wow. I mean, it's a bit, it's a kind of, it's a similar thing happening in the UK with, you know, at what point is the watershed? So when Boris lost the by-election, when his cabinet secretary resigned, you know, when the photos came out about the parties that we talked about in the last episode, that's, you know, the people are going, well, that's it. We're going to give you one more chance. You need to change your ways. And he won't. He hasn't for decades, so he's not going to. And at what point do they move past that? And it becomes, well, the same thing happened with Thatcher and with Major, where they just kind of, or it certainly happened with Theresa May, where there were just machinations in the background when it got too much. But they're not, it's not a kind of public revulsion on the part of the party to say it's got too much now, we need to go back to where we were. They've kind of they've crossed the Rubicon, they've gone that far. You know, if you can get past January 6th and still say actually Trump is fine, then you think, well, that's it, there is no going back. So you've just got to, they will just become worse and worse. And the same thing happened with the Tories when they prorogued Parliament, when they shut down Parliament in order to prevent scrutiny of their methods. That was the moment when many people in the party went, well, that's enough. But it had no effect. And the only thing that did have an effect recently was when they wanted to put in place some public health measures against the onset of Omicron to protect people from dying, yeah, basically. And they got, and that was the moment when they went, oh no, that's gone too far. And you think, well, what kind of
that's where they draw the line.
Have we now got? Yeah. Yeah. What? Yeah. And that's, and just the, you could, you know, this, that's what's behind this investigative journalism on part of the Washington Post, is actually we're seeing that the hub around which the Republican Party spins is Trump.
Yeah.
And they're kind, you know, until he dies, they're kind of stuck with that. That's the horse they've put their saddle on. That's it. They've kind of gone, right, this is where we're at. It worked last time, so anyone he endorses is going to have some kind of weight in the argument. This is how we completely continue to capture the hearts of the voting public.
Yeah, yeah. Do we want to talk about Melania's NFT, or should we?
Let's talk about Melania's NFT.
So, yeah, Melania's also getting in on grifting. I don't know your feelings about NFTs. I know my feelings about NFTs. But yeah, but Melania is releasing an NFT. And it was starting to
quite,
do multiple.
I quite liked Keanu Reeves' reaction to NFTs. Somebody was talking to him about them. You know, as the leading authority on all things nice in Hollywood, somebody said, what do you think about NFTs? He just laughed. He said, well, why would you buy one that somebody could just copy anyway? That's the thing. You might own it, but somebody, well, what's the point? Yeah. No, somebody
that's
can copy
the thing
that
with digital copies. They're identical to the original. Yeah. So, exactly. So yeah, even if you have a piece of paper that says you have the original,
I own the original.
Nothing, it's yeah, just the same thing as someone else can get for free, and you've spent exactly, hundreds of thousands of dollars usually for it because you're yeah, a fucking idiot.
Hard-earned so, crypto.
So yeah, apologies to any listeners yeah, who are very into NFTs.
Who are owning NFTs, yeah. Which actually, because Jim and I being filmmakers, NFT stands for the National yeah, Film Theatre, uh-huh, which is yeah, on the South Bank in London.
Yeah, yeah, but if any, for anyone who yeah, doesn't know, it also stands for non-fungible token. Which
sounds pretty mushroomy.
Yeah,
to
so
me.
Which basically yeah. means it's a thing that isn't worth anything. That's pretty much exactly what it means. It's something you can't use to as money. You can't use it. It has no value to anyone else. Because fungibility, the fungibility of money is the fact that you have money and it can be used. You can be used to do multiple different things. You can buy something with it, and the thing you buy with it is worth something. NFTs are usually art, and they are incredibly expensive, and it's usually almost always digital art, which means that that exists as a file, and it's very infrequently a file that only one person has access to, because there are multiple copies of a digital file that other people sometimes can just download from online, and then they have exactly the same thing you have.
As soon as you show it to somebody, because that's the point of having an artwork, is that you can show it to somebody. It's not just an investment thing. Yeah, and as soon as you do,
and
the medium on which it's displayed is perfectly
and people
copyable.
who think that NFTs are sensible make the argument of things like, if you take a photo of the Mona Lisa, you've basically got the same, an image of the Mona Lisa. That's not the same thing. The only one person has the original.
Yeah.
But the original isn't the same as a photo of it, for one thing, of the Mona Lisa. Also, it was worked on by Leonardo da Vinci, whereas your copy wasn't.
Yeah.
There isn't that thing with digital stuff. When Mark or I make a video, We email the video to a client and say, here you are. They've got exactly the same thing as we've got when we email it. But we also have a copy because we emailed it to them. So it duplicates. Yeah. They don't have an original thing. There's no difference. It's stupid. It's used for money laundering and grift and separating people from their money. And not only is Melania Trump doing this? She is now getting into releasing NFTs at regular intervals, apparently.
Oh my God.
She doesn't get what NFTs are at all. Because the press release says, Mrs. Trump will release NFTs in regular intervals with a one-of-a-kind auction of historical importance. I think that's premature, possibly. Scheduled in January 2022, including three elements: digital artwork, physical artwork, and a physical one-of-a-kind accessory. That's not a fucking NFT, then.
That's not an NFT, no.
The digital artwork is an NFT, but the physical artwork and a physical one-of-a-kind of accessory are very much F. They are...
Yeah.
You can then sell them to someone else.
Well, it's like releasing your album. I think it was Radiohead did that one year when they released their album digitally, and then they said, okay, and then we'll release it on vinyl at the end of the year. And you go, well, it's exclusively on digital. Well, it isn't.
Yeah.
So that, well, you've kind of, the exclusivity of digital has passed you by there. So it was for a while. Yeah. Except it wasn't, because everybody could get it. So it wasn't exclusive. Didn't exclude anybody. So therefore it wasn't exclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's making fungible tokens.
She's making fungible tokens to sell to people.
Yeah, not fungible tokens. That's what NFT stands for her. Yeah.
And and also the digital things as well. Does it say a portion somewhere? A portion of the proceeds from the Melania Trump NFT collection will assist children aging out of the foster care system by way of economic empowerment and with expanded access to resources needed to excel in the fields of computer science and technology. So it's all for charity. Because some of the money that people are paying Melania Trump for useless, worthless shit, some of that money, an unspecified portion, will go to children in the foster care system.
Working on programming and software development to point out to her that
NFTs are pointless.
It doesn't bloody work. Yeah. So you kind of go, it's all for charity, but is a much more attractive proposition that it's
some of it's for charity. Yeah. Because, you know, you can't expect someone like Melania Trump, who is who is, you know, paycheck to paycheck, to give all of the proceeds of anything she does to charity, that would be insane. No. She has to cover her costs.
Exactly. Yeah. Cause, and is the NFT, is it a picture of her with, do you think I care?
Or the first one that she's releasing is just a kind of a watercolour of her eyes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's not, it's a digital artwork piece of, presumably, and here's the weird thing.
It's a zoomed in picture.
If it is a watercolour, then the artist, Marc-Antoine Coulon, has done a physical thing. He's done a watercolour.
Is he then going to destroy that? Or,
well, that's the thing, because there is an original piece of art there. Mm. Either it is indeed what they call it, which is a watercolour, in which case he's taken a picture or scanned the original piece of art that he's worked on, and they're selling that, one copy of it. The others are, in fact, one of them was embedded in a news article that is about this, so I could have already downloaded it by now if I wanted it. But one person will get to say they own that, whereas everyone else will just say, I downloaded it, it's free. Marc-Antoine Coulon either has the original thing he worked on, or maybe will destroy it, in which case that doesn't... Does that increase the value of a photo of the thing he worked on?
I don't know.
Or it isn't a watercolour, and he did it digitally, in which case they shouldn't call it watercolour, because it's a digital piece of art.
Painting, using the watercolour being in Photoshop, But how much is the digital artwork?
Copy of the possibly original actual physical art
of the photo of Melania's
is one soul, which is cryptocurrency.
Okay,
it's currently worth about $150, which is also weird, given that people who believe that NFTs are a thing will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on utter bullshit.
Yeah. So she's got to be churning them out. If she's going to make...
Massively, how is this going to help the kids?
Some dollars to go to... Some of it to go to charity.
They're only getting... The kids are only getting a portion of the proceeds of that. Presumably, Marc-Antoine, the artist, has to get paid at some point.
There you go. Or at least, you know, put in a claim for his watercolours.
Yeah. $150 seems like there's not going to be much left for the kids.
No. Not going to go far.
So it feels like she doesn't know what she's doing.
But the NFT platform is supported by Parler.
Yeah, so there's also that.
Yeah.
In case you needed another reason to think this was a really bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about this Christmas.
Back in our very first Christmas episode, we talked about the war on Christmas, which we discovered is very much a war that's being fought by one side, who are desperately roaming the snowy battlefields looking for an enemy to come and attack them. Trump is pretty sure he single-handedly won that war, recently repeating the claim that nobody was saying Merry Christmas until he brought it back. He's clearly been watching Fox's coverage of their Christmas tree fire, because he said...
Whether you're Muslim, whether you're Christian, whether you're Jewish, everyone loves Christmas.
This was part of an interview with Mike Huckabee on Newsmax, which looked like it was made specifically for an online course on propaganda. The music swelled and we were assaulted by images of white Christian families around Christmas trees, and who knows, maybe some white Jewish and white Muslim families too, it's hard to tell, as they desperately tried to sell Trump as the saviour of Christmas. But it seems his followers are less sure that the victory was convincing. A recent poll from Fairleigh Dickinson's University in New Jersey found that 37% of Americans still believe there's a war on Christmas, which is up from 29% in 2013.
Wow.
And the single biggest predictor of how people voted in this poll is whether they voted for Trump in 2020. 71% of Trump voters are convinced we're coming for their sugar plums, compared to only 14% of Biden voters.
The Florida Department of Health are now officially hamstrung, not because they're underfunded, lacking in supplies of medicine, nor a desire to keep Floridians healthy. Nah, they've got 62,000 dead is just not enough for me, Governor Ron DeSantis breathing possibly unwanted viruses down their necks. Pro-vaccine TV ads were pulled recently, with the remaining money spent on anti-smoking ads, Where's Marlboro Man shouting on the airwaves against that? Oh, yeah, you can't hear him because of his voice boxectomy over the hum of his lung-supporting ventilator. New ads have been made that have footage of vaccines going in arms via syringes, but the word itself is not uttered. You think it might just be freedom of speech / public health responsibility versus strong-arming the medical sector because it's quite popular with people who don't want to get vaccinated and have deserted Trump since he got his booster shot? Yeah, vaccine number 3. Yeah, you think? And of course, DeSantis maybe just has his eye on the White House, if not re-election next year. Not so much on the shoulders of giants, Ron, as on the bodies of thousands, eh? Wake up, people. 2022 is very close, and he is literally Florida man for Pfizer's sake.
We know by now that vaccine mandates work, but when the US Air Force dismissed 27 active duty airmen for refusing to get vaccinated against coronavirus, it's hard to argue when people like small-faced right-wing bobblehead Charlie Kirk say things like, America is being actively weakened by the regime. I mean, it's hard until you think about it for like 2 seconds and realise that 27 airmen represent 0.008% of the active duty US Air Force and that the country is actually strengthened by losing military personnel who not only defied a direct order by their superiors but are apparently unwilling to make the sacrifice of taking a safe, effective vaccine to protect others. If you factor in the little detail that 148 Air Force personnel have died of COVID so far, I think that we can all figure out which side is actively weakening America. The number goes up for the Marine Corps, with 103 Marines being discharged, representing a scarily huge 0.05% of the entire Corps. Whoa. It's odd, because I've seen A Few Good Men, and I remember Lance Corporal Harold Dawson telling Tom Cruise that Marines live by a code of unit, corps, God, country. He didn't mention self in there at all.
I'm sure even we toyed with this somewhat stupefying conclusion when we were reading about Mueller's realisation that it's probably true, and now boy genius Eric Trump has confirmed it. In a recent interview with Jay Cutler for Cutler's podcast Uncut, Eric laughed that they were indeed too dumb to collude. After admitting that none of the Trumps had any knowledge of how to do politicky stuff when Donald joined the race in 2014, he added, "We weren't smart enough to collude with Russia. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. We didn't know what a delegate was." As many commentators responded online, "You might have been dumb, but you were stupid enough to try." And actually, he really is dumb enough to try it on. Just plain ignorant of ignorance being no defence in the eyes of the law. Just because you were stupid doesn't mean you didn't do it, you idiot. When the stupidest people fall back on the public's perception of their stupidity as a defence, that's either very smart or we're actually watching reruns of Goofy.
Over here in the UK, it's pretty well known that the Daily Mail is not to be trusted. It is almost, but not quite entirely, unlike actual journalism. So when misshapen pillow huckster Mike Lindell sued them for defamation earlier this year, I really wasn't sure who to root for. I mean, sure, whatever they said about him was probably not true, but what could they possibly have alleged that would potentially ruin Mike Lindell's reputation? Well, apparently, the thing which pushed him over the edge, the thing which he found so offensive, was that a group of middle-class Middle Englanders might believe that he secretly dated attractive Broadway and 30 rock star Jane Krakowski. Lindell's lawsuit claimed that it caused tremendous harm to his personal and professional reputation and prospective economic opportunities, as well as causing him significant humiliation and emotional distress. Christ, if that's what it did to him, imagine how Jane must have felt to have one single person believe she might have even considered being romantically involved with off-brand Dick Butkus. The judge in the case ruled that whether it was true or not, no defamation had taken place, saying, "Dating an actress, secret or not, would not cause public hatred, shame, ridicule, or any similar feelings towards Lindell." Weirdly, he did not add, "Besides, everyone already hates you and thinks you're ridiculous and shameful, so what's the big deal?"
I once read one of those enormous sci-fi tomes like Dune or Foundation, and all I can remember about it is there was this timeline chart in the foreword to give the context of when the story was set, and it included great swathes of time not far hence where science fell and faith in magic arose once again in its place in the new dark ages. Senator Ron Johnson, yes, Wisconsin, yes, Republican, yes, anti-vaxxer, Yes, the perfect populist mashup name, courtesy of DeSantis and Boris even, seems to be the high priest of the new epoch of anti-science. Not happy with having been chairman of the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee in December 2020 and gathering vaccine sceptics, critics of masking and social distancing and several ivermectin peddlers around his cauldron, he's now adding mouthwash to the mix, alleging, between incantations of boil, boil, tall in trouble, that standard gargle mouthwash has been proven to kill the coronavirus. If you get it, you may reduce viral replication. Why not try all these things? Despite an entire page of Listerine's website attesting to the fact that it is not in any way effective against COVID, Johnson continues to spew an evil breath lie, going so far as to dismiss Fauci as overhyping COVID like he did AIDS. With over 700,000 people having died of AIDS in the US alone and 37.7 million people worldwide, and COVID currently killing 800,000 people in the US with more than 5.3 million around the globe, and it's not done yet, it's possibly time for a witchfinder general to return and rout this weird sister from his Eye of Newt on the midterms coven. Expelliarmus!
The Republican death cult has tried everything it can think of to throw their supporters directly into the path of a deadly pandemic to own the libs, but now they're getting desperate, and they've only got one last trick up their sleeves. It's time to try socialism. Four GOP-led states, Florida, Iowa, Kansas and Tennessee, have changed their rules on unemployment insurance so that workers who either quit their jobs or are fired due to vaccine mandates will be eligible for payouts. While some Republicans argued against continued or expanded unemployment benefits during the worst parts of the pandemic when many people were losing jobs they desperately needed, claiming it would increase inflation and unemployment and destroy the economy, it's okay in this instance because these people have actively decided that their right to risk the health of their co-workers and customers is more important than their job. So they should obviously be rewarded for that.
Well, despite Boris's earlier protestations to the contrary, he has been directly responsible for a series of even more unfortunate events since we last spoke. The Tories lost the by-election in Shropshire North for the first time since the constituency was invented in 1974, with the Lib Dems gaining a 27,000 majority. Cabinet Secretary and investigator of possibly despicable things, Simon Case, resigned for having done despicable things. And Lord David Frost, the Brexit minister, nicknamed Frosty the No Man, resigned because of the new COVID restrictions. Yeah, right. We all know it's because he wanted to spend more time alone shouting about how terrible the withdrawal agreement that he himself wrote is. Yet more blatant Tory rule-flouting surfaced when 15 or so people were pictured gathering around tables of cheese and wine in the garden of Number 10 during lockdown, which was clearly a business meeting as defined by Dominic Raab, because they were wearing suits, like you would if you had a drinks gathering immediately after work and didn't happen to keep 15 or so changes of clothing at the boss's house. One does wonder, though, who is leaking this stuff to a gleeful press, and why now? Could it be the far right within the party? Sorry, business meeting. Because Boris isn't being far right enough? And whilst Omicron rages sufficiently for the rest of Europe to lock down and not allow any Brits in, Boris is unable to cancel Christmas this year, because let's face it, no one would listen anyway, and because he fears for his existence, since, like all of his predecessors after Thatcher, he's being held hostage by the far right within the party. Sorry, business meeting. We are assured, however, that the Conservative Party, sorry, business meeting, will not be holding a Christmas party, sorry, business meeting, this year, nor will they be playing all tomorrow's business meetings by the Velvet Underground at it.
My favourite meme recently has been a picture of Prince with the caption, "Tonight we're going to have a business meeting like it's 1999.
Excellent. We're going to have a business meeting like it's 1999. That's excellent. Yeah.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this year. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com, and if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our newest patrons, David Paish and Michael Stevens, our straw man level patrons, Kaz Tui, Steve Bickle, Schmutz, Mark Reiki, and Amber R. Buchanan, and our true Scotsman level patrons, Andrew Houck, Max Beaver, and our top patron, Lauren. Thanks very much for your support over the past year and beyond. It's been fantastic. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, everyone, and a very, very Merry Christmas to all of the Christians, Jews, Muslims, and anyone else who loves Christmas.
Yeah, and even if you don't, have a nice holiday.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/FallaciousTrump.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump. We'll leave the last Christmas word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.